From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
On the website of Far Reaches Farm Rare Plant Nursery, shoppers can filter the plant listings by the usual expected things like shrub or fern or shade or sun or hardiness zone. But there's also a filter for shop by plant origin, as in where in the world each of the goodies hails from. And that filter hints at the fact that the nursery's owners are longtime plant explorers and also preservationists. More in a moment about Far Reaches Farm, but first, these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com.
Kelly Dodson, who's here with me today, and Sue Milliken are the proprietors of Far Reaches Farm in Port Townsend, Washington, and also of the nonprofit Far Reaches Botanical Conservancy that seeks to acquire and conserve horticulturally and botanically important rare plants, many of them from Asia. I'm so glad to have you join me, Kelly, and to get acquainted. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Margaret. I'm really very pleased to be here today.
Yes. So if people don't know where Port Townsend is, it's a wonderful place. It's kind of a ferry ride across from Seattle, yes?
It is, and it's an old Victorian seaport, and it's just very charming. We've got some actual architecture here with old brick buildings. It's quite beautiful.
Yeah. I haven't been in a long time, but I remember it fondly. I've read that you and your partner, Sue Milliken, met in 1997 on a plant hunting expedition in Yunnan Province in southwest China. And when did you then start Far Reaches, the nursery? Tell us a little bit about sort of the quick history.
Well, I'll leave out some of the more salacious details.
Okay, good. Good.
Really quite interesting. But we found an immediate connection and bonded over, you know, this dry, spiny mound of Arenaria up on Jetawa Pass in Yunnan, and who else would love that plant? But we each did, so we knew we were meant for each other. It was a little bit time later, about 2003, we acquired this current property here within the city limits of Port Townsend, our 6 acres, and started building the nursery up, a couple of years later from that, yes.
Mm. Now, is it true that although you have this remarkable extensive collection, largely of shade plants, that you purchased 6 acres with just one tree on it and cut that tree down? Is that a true story?
It's a sad but true story, yes. It was a huge cottonwood, which isn't the most stable or durable long-term tree, so we had to take that down, and with our interest in shade gardens, we had to build this kind of massive lath house structure to house our shade garden, and it's actually worked out really quite well. We don't have root competition from shade trees.
Mm-hmm. So about how many kinds of plants, confess, Kelly, how serious is this issue of yours? How many taxa do you have in the collection, do you think? And how many are for sale at any one given moment in the catalog in the nursery?
Well, it's kind of difficult to really say. I mean, it's I guess how you define taxa. If you get into, we do a lot of, we do some breeding. And so mm-hmm. then you have hundreds of seedlings you evaluate. I guess each of those could be a taxa, but not counting those, we've got, 7,000 or 8,000 anyway.
Okay, different kinds of plants. Okay.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And then,
different species.
In any given year, some are for you propagate more of some to have them for sale. It sort of varies. I mean, I don't think you have 7,000 or 8,000 things for sale in the catalog, do you? At any one?
No, we'll do a few hundred usually,
okay.
And it's plants that come on. We don't have a big. Put everything on the catalog at once. It's just as plants grow and propagate and get of size, and we add them on. We don't do anything in really large numbers. We have a kind of an attention deficit issue. So if we get beyond a couple flats, then we move on to something else. A lot of these, plants are rare because they're difficult to propagate or take longer to finish in a pot to be saleable. But we work on those anyway. So it's a bit of a challenge, but we find it very rewarding.
So I know that you two are focused next on the nonprofit, the Far Reaches Botanical Conservancy, and I want to talk about that a little later in our discussion, the effort to sort of morph the nursery into that. But first I want to talk about some plants, some specific plants. And as I said in the introduction, you know, someone can shop by the usual filters, but they can also shop by like Vietnam, Tasmania, Russia, like these places. And I think that hints at the fact that you two have had a lot of adventure travel stamped in your, you know, kind of in your old passports, we'd see evidence of that. But you don't go when you have done this plant exploring, plant collecting, you don't go like a tourist who goes to see the bulbs blooming in South Africa or whatever at peak bloom. You go when everything's past bloom to collect seed, right?
Yeah, that's true. We've only done one trip in the spring to China to see plants in flower, and that was mind blowing. But yeah, we tend to go in the autumn when the majority of seed is available, whether it's in Asia or this past spring we went down to South America and. So it's that which would have been their fall then. So yeah, seed is what we're after generally.
Right. So I'm kind of overwhelmed at the possibilities that you have in your list. But I did see one sort of like theme-ish thing that really caught my eye. And recently my friend Ken Drews and I were talking on the show about some favorite of our early native spring perennials. We're both Eastern gardeners. And we both love things with sort of these arching stems like Solomon seal and such. And you have a lot of things like that, I think. And I don't know if that's intentional or if you're obsessed with that too. But can we talk about some of them, like the polygonatums and myanthemum and uvularia and diasporums and whatever? I saw a lot of these things. Tell me about plants that look like that.
I'd love to talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of those, that whole kind of group, I mean, they're like the disporums are now, you know, have been separated out from into a different family than polygonatums or Solomon seals. But we kind of regard them as the sort of fulfilling the same function in the garden. They have the same visual impact and appeal, really. And we are just smitten by them and for darn good reason. There's a few other things that offer that in the shade garden. Solomon seals in particular there's over 80 species of Solomon seals and variations within each species, and their diversity is incredible. I mean, it goes from the Arctic Circle down to tropical rainforest in Vietnam, and they can be, well, we've actually pitched our tent on Polygonatum hookeri at 13,000 feet in eastern Bhutan, and that only gets an inch or two high in that really short alpine turf, whereas we've got Polygonatum vietnamicum in our shade garden, and it's not done reaching its full mature size, and it's been as tall as 15 feet, so that's that's pretty awesome.
Oh my goodness. I searched for them, and it said you have 31 different polygonatums, and I was like, oh my goodness. And then you had an article on the website, I'll give a link with the transcript to it, about one that I think its synonym is, the species is Kingianum or Huanum or something. It's like a 12-footer with orange flowers. That was surprising.
Yeah, that's really a nice thing. It's one that had been regarded as a Polygonatum Kingianum. It's distinct in that it has leaves that are different than what we would see on the East Coast, for example, where the leaves are kind of following the stem and they're a little alternate sort of things, like every other stepped up the leaves, up the stem. But in Kingianum, Huanum, Vietnamicum, They're what's called a verticillate arrangement of leaves. They're little like spokes on a wheel in whorls ranked up the stem. And that's very distinctive.
Right.
And Kingianum, you know, it's like, gosh, you know, if it gets like 10, 12, or even like in the Vietnamican, 15 feet, how do you keep those upright? And they've got a clever little adaptation at the end of each leaf tip. It hooks into a little hook and will actually hold on to surrounding branchlets and of shrubs. And so we have them going up through really thin twigged shrubby dogwoods, and they can kind of self trellis themselves that way.
Oh, good idea. Oh, that's a good idea.
We're kind of lazy too in a lot of ways, and so we can make the plants do our work for us. That's great.
So I think they're now in the asparagus family. I think the Solomon seals, is that right? Is that what I mean to say? And I think that's where they are now.
Yeah, that's correct. And in the asparagaceae, and and you know, just to go on a little bit more about the diversity of them, there's been some new species been described recently by Dr. Aaron Floden at Missouri Botanic Garden, who has provided us with a number of the species that we have, and is actually an advisor to our taxonomic advisor to our conservancy. This is a great guy, and he's really the world expert on Polygonatums. It's just amazing. But there are also, in addition to the alternate leaf forms, which we're familiar with, there's the evergreen species too.
Oh.
And yeah, it's kind of crazy. And I would think, and generally these are all growing trees, epiphytes down in southern Asia.
Oh.
And you would think that something that's living in a tree with orchids in northern Vietnam would not be hardy here, but we've had them in the ground, out in the garden to 10 degrees, and that evergreen foliage is not damaged in the slightest. So,
crazy.
Really, really, yeah, really remarkable.
Crazy, yeah. So they have cousins, the myanthemums, and before I go on the Polygonatum, that's, I think here in the East, it's Biflorum is the native one, and we have I have a myanthemum up in my backyard by the fence line, by the edge of the woods. I think it's Canadense, a myanthemum, but you have some from like Guatemala and so forth. These are cousins of the Solomon seals. Yes.
That's correct. Yeah. There's, it's kind of stretches your mind a little bit to, imagine what we think of as a very northern, cold-loving plant, to find that there are relatives down on high up on the old volcanoes in Central America, where there are epiphytes growing in trees again, and some of these are just incredibly beautiful species, and they've proven hardy enough in at least in the here in the Seattle area, Pacific Northwest, and we haven't really trialed them at colder temperatures, but yeah, it's quite interesting. And some of the Asian ones are just incredible. Pink form of Oleraceum, Myanthemum Oleraceum from the Himalaya is just truly a most amazing plant with huge panicles of pinkish lavender flowers. It's just awesome.
Oh, my native one is almost a ground cover. It's a little thing with a white, you know, inconspicuous white flowers and lovely
sort of
leaves.
Yeah. Rounded leaf and or vigorous spreader. Yeah, it's a little bit scary sometimes.
Well, again, it was there when I got here, and it's kind of intertwined with moss and moss-like things. It's just kind of what there is at the edge where there's a little bit of light, where the big tall trees end and the sort of shrub layer begins. And it's just always been there and, you know, minds its own business in the outer reaches here at my property. So,
it's a nice thing for sure. And, and I might point out like one quick difference, you know, the largest difference between, Myanthemum, false Solomon seal, and true Solomon seal Polygonatum is that in Polygonatum, the flowers are held in the leaf axils, the base of the leaf, as it's ranked up the stem.
Right.
And in Myanthemum, they're terminal. They're right at the end of the stem, and it's just a big poof of showy flowers, usually.
So that's how we can figure it out, even if otherwise they might evoke the same kind of general look and maybe even be the same kind of mood in the garden, so to speak.
Right, right. And you know, and I think both of these genera offer, you know, if you're not only as from just a standard sort of gardening approach, they offer a lot to the garden, but for the really obsessed plant collector, I mean, you can dive very, very deeply into both of these, and it's really good. And then when you get that mastered, you can jump over to an allied genus called Heteropligonatum, which is not well known at all, but it's one that we're extremely excited about. These are smaller, almost exclusively Chinese, although there's one or two species that get into Vietnam and Myanmar, but they're usually epiphytic, and they differ in the flower structure and chromosome count. But we're super excited right now because currently Aaron Ploden at Missouri Botanic is describing a new species that we found and introduced. So that's about as good as it gets in our world.
Exactly, exactly. To be forever in the record books, so to speak. You know.
Yeah. And it's really, really fun to watch. You know, a botanist who specializes in such a thing as this get so excited. You know, to run the DNA and see how it, you know, fits into the whole group of known species. And you know, and it's like, wow, this is an outlier. This is very good, you know, and it feels very good to just be able to contribute to, you know, sort of the sum of human knowledge in a small way.
Right.
Want
to shout out the Desporum a little bit, because that's one that, again, it has that same look in a way, or, you know, the structural thing, but it's different. It's, I think it's really in the Colchicum family, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true, and that doesn't, you know, that's kind of odd to look at the, you know, like fall crocus, the colchicum, and how does that fit in with this? But it's how it works, and but yeah, they're really beautiful plants, and usually with flowers individually that are larger than Polygonatums, and individually larger than Maianthemum, but yeah, they're very showy plants.
I don't think we have native ones. Do we have native ones in the United States? I'm trying to think. I don't think so.
Yeah, Margaret, we used to.
we lost them.
several species of Desporum, and they're really prominent in Asia. But
yes.
A few years back, molecular research indicated that these needed to be separated from one another, and so our native Desporum are now Prosartes.
Oh, okay, that's what happened. See, I was confused.
Yeah.
Taxonomy.
Yeah, that's what happened. And initially, you know, and I always hate it when a major name change comes like that, because that's just like, you know, I have to get the old brain to catch up to it and have it be part of the lexicon. But mostly we have to make all these database changes. And
right.
But it makes sense in a way, because just from a purely nursery standpoint, Desporum, the Asian Desporum, you can propagate those by rooting them from stem cuttings.
Oh.
And and Prosartes, the North American, which used to be Desporum, just will not do that. So that's a kind of a major difference.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, might not have, you know, botanical relevance, but from a cultural standpoint, you know, it's like, well, I can separate these two out.
Right. So before we talk about the conservation efforts and the nonprofit, I wanted to just ask, are there other sort of, is there another thread or another group of plants that you're deep into that you're particularly excited about that you want to shout out to us so that when we're digging through this extensive list, we make sure to read about it?
Oh, sure. Gosh, you know, that's a bit of a problem for us, because we are such, you know, I don't know, how do you say this, focused generalists, I guess. There's so many things that interest us. Currently, we're fairly intrigued by the African violet family, Gisneriades.
Oh.
And we have been collecting and growing those, I think, for a large part, you know, for colder areas than us. They're going to be restricted to be like indoor houseplants. But we've been getting some that have been quite hardy for us outside here in a good zone 8. So that's rather encouraging.
Interesting.
Another group that we like a lot are honestly we've been getting into ferns too, and yes. We've tried to avoid ferns for a long time because there's just so darn many of them.
It's a slippery slope, Kelly.
Oh,
the ferns.
Oh man, tell me, but yeah. But we kind of focus more on ferns that don't look like classic ferns. So we're really mad about the entire leaf ferns, like pyrosia, the felt ferns, and things of that sort of ilk, I guess.
Okay. Less ferny ferns, in other words.
Yeah, yeah.
In laypeople terms. So yeah. I want to spend the last 3-4 minutes that we have. I want to hear about the conservancy and kind of what the Far Reaches Botanical Conservancy. And it says on the website, the mission is sort of conservation through cultivation of botanically important plants. So tell us what that means.
Well, that means that, you know, a lot of plants are in the wild are severely threatened by climate change or just human resource exploitation, you know, whether it's timber harvest or agriculture, grazing, that sort of thing.
Yes.
There many of these things have just a tenuous foothold, and climate change is no joke. It's going to be, I hardly ever hear anybody say that it's going to be catastrophic, but it is.
Yes.
And that's, which is a horror, really. Most of these plants, you know, it's just going to take a minor change in climate and their growing conditions are gone. And we have to be able to preserve the unique genetics of these plants in cultivation, whether it's in, you know, botanic gardens or home gardens. And a large part of our conservancy function is acquiring these vulnerable species, propagating them, and then trying to get them distributed as widely as possible. To ensure their survival while maintaining, you know, a core representative collection ourselves as a, you know, sort of the ultimate backup, I guess.
Right, and the thing about preserving them is even if, I mean, we don't know what the role of a lot of them, you know, what the roles a lot of them play are. Like they could have great uses and be really critical to other creatures on the planet. Like we just don't even understand some of them probably and how, where they fit in to the bigger picture. So to lose things whose roles we don't even fully understand, you know, could be even more costly than we grasp right now.
That's absolutely true. And we also feel like there is sort of almost a moral imperative to save these plants because we're the ones causing them to be lost. We should be responsible for saving them. And you're absolutely right, Margaret. We don't have any idea what these plants might offer in the future, but you know, you can look at any ecosystem and the more diversity you have, the more resilient that ecosystem is. And we don't have any idea what human needs are going to be or what bird needs or animal needs.
Right.
And just the more we can provide, the better it's going to be.
Well, Kelly Dodson from Far Reaches Farm and from the conservancy related to Far Reaches Farm, I'm glad to speak to you, and I'm glad I kind of met by phone, you and Sue Milliken, your partner in this endeavor, and I hope we're going to speak again. So thank you so much for making time today.
You're welcome, and I hope we get to meet in person as soon as travel gets going again.
You never know.
you
never know.
Do you?
I might be there with my U-Haul to buy a few plants and drive back across the country. Kidding. But yes, thank you so much.
Thank you, Margaret.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full-gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. Brushwoodnursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
And thanks to all the rest of you for listening. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.